Mark O'Cahasig from the Green Party, you're very welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much for having me in, Dara. I appreciate it.
Listen, the pleasure is mine. Before we get into the whole dynamics and the politics of the Greens, where are you from and, you know, what got you into this?
Yeah, I wouldn't be well known, I suppose, around the borderlands of Limerick, of Waterford and Cork. I'm from the east of the county, so I'm from Butlerstown, which is right beside where I'm living now, Tramore. I've been based in Tramore since 2008. I think, like a lot of people, I would have gone away from my college education. It took me a long time to navigate my way back to Waterford, which of course is one of the issues with Waterford. We lose our young population for a long period of time. They have to come down here to Cork and on into UCC, or they travel to Dublin. But anyway, by 2008, I managed to find my way back home, I suppose. I'd qualified as primary school teacher. I'd done a couple of years teaching in Dublin. And then I suppose we moved home and got married, myself and my wife, Roisin O'Grady. We moved down in 2008 and I got a job in my current school, Glornamara in Tramore. And I've been teaching away happily ever since.
Now, just to cut across here, you mentioned your wife there. Is she the classical soprano?
She's a classical soprano trained in Cork. Actually, we met in Cork, so I suppose we're a marriage made in UCC.
Well, that's nice to know. I mean, good things come out of Cork.
Good things. Right in the middle of the word success are the letters UCC. That's what we were taught when we were up there. No, good things coming out of Cork, and we've very fond memories of Cork as well. But, of course, the tug of home is always very strong. So we were very pleased when, actually, we were living in Dublin during the Celtic Tiger, during the last big boom. And we managed to navigate our way home to Tramore. And we've had a lovely life since then. I have three small boys at home now, 5, 7 and 3. I know you were going to ask me why it was I got involved in politics, and I suppose green politics in particular. And that's very much linked to the fact that I have children. And that's right, what okay. motivated me to get out the door. I'm telling this story often now lately, but it was when my middle child arrived in 2014. Just after that, there was one of those IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report came out. And it was the report where the language changed from kind of just very bland scientific language into something that was much more really a call for action, that was saying, look, this climate crisis is serious. And I was looking at a young fella who just arrived. And that kind of gives you 40 years extra onto your own life expectancy. So I was looking at that and I was thinking, now, when he's my age and when he's trying to start a family, what's the world going to look like for him? And so that's my motivation. I mean, we have a lovely life in Tramore. I'm very fond of primary school teaching. It's a lovely, honest job. I really enjoy spending time with the children. Why on earth am I going out knocking on doorsteps and trying to move away from my family to the Doyle? Well, that's why. I'm motivated by my children. I'm motivated by the future of the children of the classes that I'm looking at. And that's why I'm out on the doors and knocking and asking people for their number one vote, because I think we have huge changes to undertake in our society. And I think it's the Green Party who have the best ideas of how we make those changes while bringing everybody along with us, while protecting our most vulnerable.
You see, Mark, I'm sure a lot of listeners will be a little bit dubious about the Greens. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go back over 10 years ago. The last time the Greens were in government, and we'll all remember the election mm-hmm. in 2011 when they were wiped out, literally. But John Gormley, who was minister at the time in government, brought out this policy regarding the use of diesel in cars. Mm. Saying it was the cleanest option, it was the most environmentally friendly option, gave discounts on road tax based on your CO2 emissions. Everybody in the country almost transferred mm-hmm. to diesel.
Absolutely.
Now, we're into a whole new decade mm-hmm. and the rhetoric has changed. Oh, God, no, that's the evil one now. You can't be driving diesel anymore. And I see Toyota now have stopped manufacturing diesel. They've gone to hybrid, they've gone to electric. You see, I think a lot of people will get the green message, but mm. if it's going to hit them seriously in their pocket, then that's going to be an issue. And my roundabout question is this. If in 2009 diesel was the way to go, in 2020 it's not the way to go, What's going to change in 2030? Are we going to be flip-flopping around? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a very good question. I think maybe I'm bad at politics, but I think when you make a mistake, you should own the mistake. Now, the change on a large scale to diesel engines, in retrospect, has turned out to be a mistake. What I'll say only in defence of that is I don't think we were well informed. I don't think the European car industry was well informed when that decision was made. And we've seen since that the likes of Volkswagen and so on, they did really manage to pull the wool over the eyes of a lot of people in terms of the NOx emissions, which was, of course, nothing. We'd never heard NOx emissions discussed at all in 2011 when these decisions were made. But no, it's a fair point. And I would say on electric cars as well, this has actually been held up by Minister Richard Bruton and by Fine Gael as the silver bullet that's going to solve our transport. But I don't think, and the Green Party don't think, that replacing petrol vehicles with electric vehicles like for like, we don't think that's a solution. We think what we need to be doing is investing in public transport and investing in active transport. So making cycling safe and accessible for our children, making walking a lot more accessible. I was listening to Saoirse McHugh last night. She was on the television and she made the point that there's 1.8 million people in Ireland who can't drive a car. So be that true children or people in later old age or people suffering with disability. And if we just transition like for like to electric cars, we don't in any way facilitate their transport options.
Well, that is a valid point, Mark. And I'm conscious that you're from the constituency of Waterford, where we're based mm-hmm. here is the constituency of Cork East. However, not too far down the road from you all, you've got Tallow. Mm-hmm. Go further on, you've got Lismore. Then you've got to go over to Capoquin. They're rural towns.
I've only been over that road. I drove today on the way into studio.
Now, I know from talking to residents over there, and I visit that area quite a lot, one of their biggest concerns is the lack of public transport,
yeah.
of proper public transport that they can rely on, that they can, you know, map it out from their day. Well, there'll be a bus pass here at 9 o'clock, 11 Absolutely. O'clock, whatever it is. I mean, it's great in theory to talk, let's go all green here, lads. Absolutely. I think there's other things we can be doing as well in the meantime. But if we want to encourage people not to drive or only drive when they absolutely need mm-hmm. to drive, or for those people, as you said, the 1.4 million people that don't drive at all,
yeah.
we need to provide that alternative. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be coming. That vision doesn't seem to be there.
You're dead right. You're 100% right. I actually knocked on a door in Dungarvan on Monday night, and the man who came out was wearing the Local Link fleece, you know, the Local Link bus fleet, and he was very pleased to see me. He said, good, here's a man that I have a chat to. He was saying they don't have the resources. He said they don't have bus stops. Now, there's a lot of people. Actually, I met with Dervla Murphy, the very famous cyclist in Lismore, and she never, ever drove a car. But she was making exactly that point. She's living in the heart of Lismore town. And for her to access Dungarvan or to connect on, if she wanted to go to Cork or onto Waterford, it's just not there. And that's why we need to properly fund public transport and rural public transport. There's a huge amount of rural isolation. So if you're an older person and for whatever reason you can no longer drive, if you're living in Capoquin or Tallow or Lismore and you fancy getting in around Dungarvan to do your few messages and things like that, you're dead right. The infrastructure just isn't there. And that's why we think that the way our public or the way our transport department is funded at the moment, it's 2-1 in favour of road building. And we want to flip that ratio. So we want the 2 to be spent on public and active transport modes and the 1 to be spent. We need to really heavily invest in our public transport options to make it a safe and a viable option for people. It needs to be a lot cheaper. I'm on the train to Dublin tomorrow. I'm up for the SIPTU conference on pensions because I'm the party's social protection spokesperson. And I'm taking the decision to take the train up and back to Dublin.
But it's not cheap.
It would be cheaper for me to drive. Mm-hmm. So I'm making that decision for environmental reasons. I also want to get a bit of work done on the way. I recently took my kids up to the zoo, to Dublin Zoo, and we made a day of it. We said, look, we get the train up, that makes a day of it. But it was 4 times the cost of what it would have cost me to jump into our Peugeot, good diesel car, good high efficiency. We would have zipped up in no time at all, and no having to walk across from Houston Station over to the zoo. So you need to make that choice. I believe that my philosophy around politics is you have to make it easy for people to make the good decisions, the right decisions. So at the minute, it's hard to make a decision to use public transport. It's not there, it's expensive, it's unreliable. We need to invest in that.
You talk about good decisions, Mark, and I want to take you back. You've been nearly enough the same age as myself, mid-40s or maybe a bit younger, but I go back to a time when we used to get our milk delivered to the door mm-hmm. every morning in a milk bottle,
yep.
not a plastic carton, a milk bottle. Or if you went to the local shop to buy your lemonade, you bought it in a glass bottle. You returned that glass bottle to be recycled and you got your 10p or your 20p, or if you were very, very lucky, you might get 30p. You had enough for a bar of chocolate going to school. You said we have to make things easier for people to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So whilst you want to do the flip of 2-to-1 ratio in favour of public transport and roads, I would argue the roads need to be upgraded too for the public transport to get around that bit easier. But why not put together plans that actually make sense? If, for instance, let's go back to the glass bottle days. What was wrong with them?
You're talking about the Waste Party, the Green Party Waste Reduction Bill. Now, this is one of a great failing of the last government. The Green Party, facilitated by Labour, we put together a Waste Reduction Bill, and one of the main planks of that was exactly what you're talking about, a deposit return scheme. It works well all over Europe for cans, for your plastic bottles, to move us away from single-use plastics. Now, that was passed by the Dáil. It was past second stage, it passed committee stage, and it was one of these infamous money order things. So Fine Gael took a look at the bill. They decided they didn't want to implement it. The Department of Expenditure decided to implement the money message, and they did that with several people before profit bills as well. One, Breed Smith's fossil fuels bill, very famously. And they killed it. They put it into purgatory, and now that government has fallen. And an extremely workable piece of legislation. I mean, everybody feels exactly as you do, that there has to be a way for us to build in that reusable plastics. That is written, it's ready to go, it's gone through committee stage, second stage in the Dáil, the whole lot, ready to head and become legislation. And that was killed off by Fine Gael. That was a very deliberate political decision. And it's a very bad decision. It's a very bad decision for all of us. There's great examples in Denmark, for example. So the 10 cents or the 20 cents on a plastic bottle return, that might mean a great deal to me. So in Denmark, they have a donate option on the reverse vending machines. So I might fire in my 20 bottles of Coke that I have every Tuesday or whatever I'm doing, in go the bottles, the plastic bottles, and instead of taking out a euro, which is going to mean very little to me, I press a button and that goes to Meals on Wheels or goes to the Red Cross. These are simple, common sense ideas. You're dead right. And there's an appetite for them. People want it.
I'm conscious of time, Mark, and I know you've a campaign to run down in Dungarvan this evening, but another, you're talking about making life simple. I suppose for older people particularly, when they hear the term carbon tax mm-hmm. is when they get a bit fearful, because anything that impacts on their weekly pension.
Yeah.
We have very, very extreme medical costs, you know, as we know, for prescription charges and all that. If the price of a bag of coal goes up,
yeah,
or if the price of a bottle of gas goes up, it sends ripples through households and particularly older people. And I was referring to bonkers.ie, the platform that offers you choice to compare prices between electricity providers mm-hmm. and gas suppliers and all that. And something that I found very interesting, somebody asked the question, how can I save money with carbon tax coming down the line? And I just thought this line is perfect. Using wood to fuel your fire and maybe investing in some woolly jumpers to keep it warm.
Yeah, no, that's it's a flippant response. But I would say, okay, let's look at the carbon tax firstly. And the carbon tax that we're currently paying is a Fine Gael model. It's actually not what we're advocating for at all. So in the Fine Gael model, the carbon tax goes into the general pot like everything else. It goes into our general expenditure. A big problem with that is if it's factored into government spending, day-to-day spending, there's no incentive for the government to reduce it. So what we're looking for, it was actually our MEP Grace O'Sullivan, who's also based in Tremor, she coined the phrase carbon cashback. So we believe that if carbon tax is levied, it should be put into a central pot and kept to one side, and then should be split back out. Now, we road tested this with the ESRI because I would believe that we're a party of the centre left as well. So we're very much about protecting the most vulnerable, those pensioners that you're talking about in low performing houses in terms of the energy ratings. So what the ESRI found is that a poorer person uses less carbon. So if we pay everything into a central pot and split it back out equally, a poorer person will receive more back from the carbon tax than they paid into it. In fact, it's a socially progressive tax if we structure it that way. The other thing that we need to do is use some of the carbon tax to retrofit people's homes. So instead of woolly jumpers, which of course is a terrible idea, it's going to cause all sorts of health problems and morbidity in older people and poorer people. And I'm so conscious of the issue around fuel poverty. Instead of that, let's put them into warmer, healthier homes. It'll nearly pay for itself in the health returns alone, not to mind the fact that we send 6 billion euro per year abroad on fossil fuel. If we half that, if we say, okay, rather than 6 billion a year, we spend 3 billion a year on fossil fuels that we send abroad, that's a 3 billion year-on-year stimulus package. It's 3 billion that's going to stay in the pockets of the people who in fact are living in the most poorly insulated home. As you well know, people who throw the coal into the fire and 90% of that heat goes straight up and out of the chimney. So as well as making sure that we move in a progressive way, we also have to make sure that we're retrofitting homes and helping people to live in what we know are going to be much warmer and much healthier homes. And over time, this is something that pays for itself.
Mark, I'm just going to cut you right there. I have to go to a commercial break. Will you stay with me? Because there's one or two other issues I want to get to just after the break, but I won't delay you too long from your canvas in Dunfermline. I was talking to Mark O'Cahasig of the Green Party. Delighted to say that Mark has agreed to stay with me, even though that his supporters and canvassers are waiting very patiently down in Dungarvan.
But they're sure, well, used to me being late, I tell you.
Sure, of course they are, Mark. Mark, you're the Green Party spokesperson on social protection.
I am.
The big, how would I say, the elephant in the room, the one that has made most headlines in the last few days, is the old age pension. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I look at somebody like my mother now, who's 85. I mean, she's at an age where it won't concern her. But people like you and I, as we advance in years, people who have, even today, who are out there working, they've been working 30, 40 years. I was listening to stories on Liveline with Joe Duffy, people that went to work at the age of 14, and now they're at 65 and they're thinking, what the hell? Mm-hmm. What's the Green Party's take on this? Are you all for pushing out the retirement age that even longer? Or when somebody gets to an age where they just can't do it anymore?
Yeah, no, we want to. So what we're talking specifically about is this movement of the state pension age going from 66 back to 67. And then it's planned to go further again. It's planned to go to 68, which I think would make us the oldest in the world for receiving the state pension. Now, we think we have to hit the pause button on this, because people haven't had time to make any adjustment for it. I personally think it's bad policy and bad economics, because what we know is people over their working life, they try to amass that little bit of something, a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of a lump sum that they're going to have going into their retirement. Now, I suppose I'm referring to my own parents, really, who worked all their lives, as you described. And then when they came to retirement age, they had that little bit of nest egg. And that's been put aside. It's been placed to one side against older or late old age, because they know that in that later part of their lives, there are going to be associated health costs. And so they have that nest egg, and they have a put away, a rainy day fund, if you like.
I was just about to interject, the rainy day fund, yeah.
And what's going to happen now, because we're creating this 2-year pension gap, so if you have a mandatory retirement at 65 and somebody then can't get their state pension until 67, what's going to happen is people are going to have to dip into that rainy day fund. And that means in later life, they're going to make they're going to make worse decisions, because if they suddenly need have a medical expense, maybe they'll choose not to meet it because they don't have that cushion. They don't have that little built-in rainy day fund. So ultimately what will happen is people will make poor decisions around, will I buy the bag of coal? Will I go to see the GP? Will I take on that extra cost? And of course, what you'll end up with is people who have to throw themselves at the mercy of the state earlier in the in that late old age. I think it's just a bad way to spend the money. Now, certainly, we have to look at pensions and how we fund pensions. We know that people, we know that our population is ageing, and that at the moment we have, I think it's 5 workers for every 2 people in retirement. And we know as we move along, that ratio is going to change. But we need to hit the stop button on this current one, because the decision is not correct. And we also need to look about flexibility. Again, so I've been talking to different people on the doors. Actually, canvassing is pleasant in that way. I was fearing it, to be quite honest, before local elections in May. But I've been talking to people who've been in physical, manual labour, and they're telling me, no, look, I have to go at 65. I can't be doing this at 67. I'm a primary school teacher. I don't know if I can imagine facing a class of junior infants at 67. But then there are people...
You might not want to be doing that at 55, let alone 67.
Indeed. But then there are people, I know my own father, when he retired, he would have loved an option to step back, but not step all the way out the door. He had a huge amount. He was an instructor in FOS, and he used to instruct drafting, and he had a huge amount still to contribute. And he felt it very hard that at 65, the shutters came down, and he was told, no, you're not useful here anymore. And so we need to have a flexibility when we come to retirement.
See, I think you've raised a valid point there, Mark, and I'm glad that you raised that. I mean, you see it with RT. People like David Davenport, great broadcaster, great journalist, at 65. Good luck, thanks, you're gone. There are a lot of people out there who have huge value, who have still so much to give to society, but because they hit this golden age, the rhetoric is, good luck and thanks, here's your watch, if you're lucky, and off with you.
Incredible wealth of experience. My father now...
Well, that's it. Yeah, and you can't buy that experience.
Had he been able to go back into that training centre 2 days a week and help some of the younger instructors to structure their training programmes, to give them feedback, to look at their modules and give them some critiques on the modules, he would have loved that, and it would have contributed so much to his sense of self-worth. Of course, like many men... myself included, he built so much of his self-definition into what he did, into his career. And it was extremely difficult at 65 to be told, that's it, you're no longer, this thing that's defined you for 40 years, that's no longer useful to us. Go away now out that door and find something else to do with yourself.
And don't let the door hit you on the way out. Yeah,
so we have to give, we don't want people in manual work, you know, past 65, it's too physical, it's too hard on the body. But there are people out there with huge skills, huge range of experience. We have to be much more flexible in how we view this retirement and allow people to engage in that. And all the benefits, I mean, there's an economic payoff, that's fine, but there's also the social benefit. We know a lot of men retire, and three years later, we visit their funeral because they lose their way. They lose that will.
And women as well. We have to include them.
For sure.
I'm conscious of time, Mark, and I don't want to hold you too much longer. Right, people are going to go out to the polls on the 8th of February. Mm-hmm. They're going to be looking at the ballot paper, and there'll be all sorts of names and emblems and all sorts. Why should a person vote for Mark O'Cossig?
Or Liam Quaid, I better get Liam's mention.
Well, Liam is running here for Cork East, yeah.
So myself or Liam, I tell you, look, we know in our experience of our own lives, we know that we have a need for climate action. We know we have a need for biodiversity. I'm only 43 years of age, and I've seen in my own life the change in climate. I've seen in my own life the decline. My favourite sound in the whole world is a curlew singing. And there's no nesting curlews anywhere in County Waterford anymore. Any curlew you hear in Waterford actually has a Scottish accent. They fly in from... None of them nest. We have no breeding pairs.
I actually never heard a curlew with a Scottish accent. That's good. Well, you did a lot of good things in Waterford.
Absolutely, but... We stand for those things, but as well as that, I think people recognise this about the Green Party as well. We're almost too honest for our own good. and we bring in integrity. I'd prefer to talk about Liam than myself in this case. You know, he is such a straight arrow. He's absolutely 100%. He's dead sound, as we'd say in Waterford. And so I think when you're voting for the Green Party, you're voting for those kind of actions that we need, but you're also voting for people who have an honesty to them. If I was only here for an ego trip, or if I was only here for personal advancement, I'd be in a different party, because in the Green Party, you're pushing water uphill. So that's not what we're here for. We believe in our politics, we believe in our policies, and we're really here to try and make a difference. So I'm looking for every single number one vote that I can leverage on February the 8th.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you for taking time to come in, to come across the bridge, as they say.
It was a pleasure.
Into the county of Cork. I won't tell Liam you were here, but sure, Liam will be into us anyway at some stage. But look, best of luck on the 8th of February. I have a sneaking feeling, because I am a political hack. I've followed elections for many, many years. I think this will be a slightly different election to 2016. I think Fine Gael are in for a little bit of a hammering.
I think you're right.
But I think there's a huge opportunity for the Greens. I mean, there was a green wave in the county council. I mean, they got more, and even with the European elections as well.
Yeah.
I think the Greens need to focus on that, harness that, and, you know, give that message like you've been giving today, that you're a caring people, that you don't want to frighten people with carbon tax and with you want to make it easier and make it more attractive to bring people with you. And you're doing the right thing, not just for now, but for in the future as well.
Absolutely.
And I have a sneaking feeling as well that the whole pension debacle could be a decider of this election, because it's been down through the years. And I use this term with no pun intended, but when you go after the grey vote, you do so at your peril.
Mm-hmm.
So watch the space. But in the meantime, Mark Okosik of the Green Party and Social Protection Spokesperson, best of luck in the election.
Thanks
and
very
we'll
much.
Be following your progress. And if you are deemed elected on the 9th of February, you'll come back to us again and we'll have a chat.
I'd be delighted to come back.
Very good.